I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about ways Indianapolis and Central Indiana can make it easier for people to find good jobs and for employers to find the workers they need. We'll discuss efforts to improve workforce development. My guests are Nicole Thompson and Chelsea Meldrum. They are, respectively, the President, CEO, and the Vice President of Development with Employ Indy. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about employment and workforce development in Central Indiana. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Well, my guests are both from Employ Indy. They are Nicole Thompson, who is the president and CEO, and Chelsea Meldrum, who is the vice president of development. Nicole, Chelsea, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's good to have you both here. So probably ought to start this by asking you to talk a little bit about what Employ Indy is. And I'll start with Nicole on that one.
Employ Indy is Marion County's Workforce Development Board, and primarily we're responsible for taking both public and private funding and using those dollars to develop career and education pathways for our residents, which will fill the jobs that are in demand and really meet the needs of employers here locally.
So, and what sorts of services then does Employ Indy perform? I'll go with you, Nicole.
Employ Indy, the majority of Employ Indy's funding is federal funding dollars, and we utilize those dollars to implement services within the Work One centers here in Marion County. We also have the ability to go after additional federal dollars, state dollars, private funding to implement additional programs that will serve the residents here locally to either upskill an individual, get them additional training, or just to help them with job placement here in Marion County.
Okay, so Chelsea, make the case for me here as the development person, someone who's done a little bit of fundraising myself. You know, if you are approaching someone and asking them to support Employ Indy, what do you say the mission of the organization is? What am I buying into? What's the case statement?
Essentially, we're asking those who fund the organization to really support individuals who may not necessarily have a lot of solid work experience and or need some additional training, have some barriers to employment. You know, our core mission is to get people into good paying, sustainable jobs. So we really just, you know, we're seeking support and partners that will help us accomplish that mission.
And how many people do you serve? Does Employ Indy serve? How many do you refer to them as clients or what is the terminology that you use?
I think we will say clients or customers. And over the course of a number of programs and our services within the Work One offices physically, we serve tens of thousands of people that walk through those doors throughout the course of the year. We probably enroll into training and employment services in just our Work One centers alone, probably closer to about 3,500 individuals.
Annually, or is that on
annually?
Annually, 3,500 mm-hmm. folks. And what sorts of things do they come to you looking for? What kinds of help?
Primarily, individuals will come to us because they've heard of a particular program or because they've been referred by a friend or a relative that have utilized the services that we have. Oftentimes, individuals are entering a Work One office because of unemployment issues. And they're looking to get some resolution to some of those. And they find out that once they're there, we actually really heavily focus on the reemployment side of that. And so primarily people will walk in with the need for, how do I get a job? And so we will sit down with them and understand, you know, what their history has been, what their goal will be, and then we try to help them fill in the middle and how they might get there. And that may include a need for additional skills training, whether that's a certification program or it may be longer. It may need to be an associate's degree program, but we'll consider that within their career plan. Or it could be that someone just really needs some assistance with resume development and interviewing skills and really how to present themselves. And so we'll focus our attention on that aspect.
And what is the most common challenge that you see when people come to you that they need? Where do they need the help the most?
I think primarily people want a job, right? They want sustainability and the comfort of a paycheck on a regular basis. I think some of the barriers to that within Indianapolis are transportation issues for a lot of the individuals that we serve, childcare issues for a lot of the individuals that we're serving. So we work to utilize some of those federal dollars to try to offset some of that for them.
Some of the costs of doing that. And how do you go about when you say you utilize some of those federal dollars? How do you do that? Is it beyond training? Are you able to subsidize the transportation costs, subsidize their child care? Chelsea, you're nodding your head, so I'm going to go with you.
I am. It depends on the funding source maybe that we're utilizing to assist a customer. You know, we are our traditional Workforce Investment Act or Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, which is how that's transitioned or is transitioning currently. It allows for some supportive services like, you know, like transportation and child care. We're able to write that into some special projects and expand, you know, an individual's access to supportive services within a program. We also have had, 10 plus years of support from the Lilly Endowment through our Youth Employment Services Program, which allows us to provide, you know, barrier busting vouchers and services to individuals who, you know, can't pay a utility bill or can't buy supplies and uniforms for a particular training program or job that they might need in order to go to work or to continue training.
How do you define success in what you do? Is it helping someone find jobs or achieve certain competency levels or what? What constitutes a success for you, Nicole?
I think, you know, we obviously have our metrics that we're required to report on from a federal standpoint, and success being number of individuals touched and return on investment there. But I think for us, it's how we've impacted someone and whether or not we can determine that, you know, we have increased their annual salary by a certain percentage or we've increased their education attainment level by X number of grade levels. So we measure success differently depending on program and what dollars we're utilizing.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about employment and workforce development here in Central Indiana on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. So has this work gotten more complicated as time has gone on? Because, you know, we've done several shows, and there's a lot of evidence out there that the American economy, and to some degree the world economy, is changing dramatically. I mean, a lot of economists are warning about the development of what, in non-political terms, you know, political term is talk about income inequality. Non-political terms, they talk about it as an hourglass economy, that the middle class is getting smaller and smaller proportionally, and that the, you know, sort of the bubbles or the bells at either end of that are getting larger, which I would think, given what you do, would make the task of working with folks who want to enter the workforce a whole heck of a lot more complicated. Is that the case, Nicole?
I would say it is getting more complicated. I think that, you know, and it's really a matter of the individuals that are out there now having the skill sets required to keep up with the change in industry and the constant need for continuous education. And so there are a number of individuals that really just want to work. They don't want to continue to go to school. And unfortunately, I think fortunately, but unfortunately for some, I think the world is changing in that way, where you have to constantly be learning, especially technology. Technology is a huge focus in every industry, and the need for those technical skills is extremely important. So I think that that makes it harder in some essences to serve the population of people that we're trying to touch. I think that funding continues to dwindle. And so when you talk about strategic investment, if there's really a drive to be more strategic. There's a drive to bring more stakeholders to the table to really leverage and braid additional funding sources to more fully serve an individual. And so getting the right people to the table and ensuring that those conversations happen and those strategies are in place and moving forward is sometimes a challenge, but it has been sort of the shift that we've seen.
Is it tough? I mean, right now, obviously, the governor in his State of the State two nights ago talked about the fact that we've got more Hoosiers working now than at any time in the state's history, and that the unemployment rate has been cut almost in half from what it was. And that's the very good side of that coin. The other side, though, is that the bottom end of the middle class is really seeming to be squeezed here. We've got between 1 in 4 and 1 in 5 of the children in the state living at poverty levels, and huge pockets of people who are working very hard, who have jobs, but they aren't necessarily sustainable. So I would think that that adds a layer of complication to what you have to do, too. I want to hear both of your thoughts on that, because it seems to me that's a different – moving from unemployment to employment is one kind of challenge, but moving from not particularly sustainable employment to sustainable employment is a very different kind of challenge. I'll start with Chelsea on that one.
Yeah, your point's a good one. We actually we do have some special programming currently to address that very issue. Employ Up is a program that was funded by the Department of Labor at $8.3 million a little over a year ago. And while it's focused on long-term unemployed individuals, it's also focused on those who are underemployed. So we have the ability to upskill and or prepare for the workforce or a job of a higher degree, higher level, higher skill level. We have the ability to prepare these individuals to move up the career ladder. I think our biggest challenge in that is identifying those folks. You know, those folks who are underemployed are just that. They're working, they're managing families, they're managing life, and our ability to access them or make them aware of the services that we have available is a little more challenging to us. They aren't necessarily walking into our office because they've lost a job. And, you know, they're not receiving a paycheck and they need reemployment services. So, you know, as I said, Employ Up is one example of a program that we have to assist those individuals who are underemployed and need the tools and potentially the training and the services in order to continue to move up that career ladder and through a sustainable career pathway.
Nicole, how do you go about intervening in that situation? Because as Chelsea's pointed out, it's not like these folks have you know, one of the things about being unemployed is you do have more time, obviously. It's not a situation you want to be in. But if you're already working a job, and as Chelsea points out, you got a family and all of those other obligations, then finding the training or even the chance to go in for some counseling to figure out how to upgrade your resume or better market yourself is you know, a dearly bought commodity.
A couple of ways we've really tried to tackle some of that is through our mobile outreach. We have worked with a number of community organizations, a number of libraries here within the county to make sure that we take our services on the road, so to speak, and we have the ability to serve individuals where they're already being served. So they're not needing to then go to a physical Work One office in order to tap into those services as well. Additionally, I think because there are those people that still have jobs and are working 8 to 5 and may not necessarily work within our hours, we, a number of years ago, and continue to sort of build and strengthen our virtual presence. And so you can find a lot of the services that you can get within a physical Work One office on our virtual site at workoneindy.com.
Go ahead and give them that again because so that people know.
Sure, sure, absolutely. We would love for everyone to tap into workoneindy.com. It's a number of services that you can receive there. You can receive information. You can do some virtual career counseling online. And then if it's determined that you need to come in and set an appointment to talk to a career coach, we're happy to make that when it's convenient for you. But we can do that virtually initially.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about employment and workforce development in Central Indiana. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are both from Employ Indy. They are Nicole Thompson, who is the president and CEO, and Chelsea Meldrum, who is the vice president of development. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about employment and workforce development in Central Indiana. My guests are Nicole Thompson, who is the president and CEO of Employ Indy, and also from Employ Indy, Chelsea Meldrum, who is the vice president of development. Before we went to the break, we were talking really about the challenges of moving people from underemployment or less sustainable employment to, you know, more sustainable jobs, something that they can carry on. How much of this, I mean, if we are looking at development of new economic patterns, and I know, you know, it's a cliche now to talk about how in previous generations, the notion was that you came out of school and you started working someplace, and that's what you did pretty much until you retired. Now, I know with my students, the numbers that keep coming out say that, you know, by the time you retire, if in fact you get to retire at some point, means in all likelihood you're going to have 20 to 25 job changes of some kind, at least at the high end. What does that mean about how we should be preparing people for this new kind of job and work environment and landscape? I want to hear both of you on this, but I'm going to start with Nicole.
I think that it's extremely important for individuals to understand now that we are in an environment that requires constant learning and constant upskilling. Regardless of if you switch from employer to employer every couple of years, your job within a certain employer is going to continue to change. And so there's a need there to ensure that you're staying current on skill sets and continuing to learn. Additionally, I think that it's important that industry keep post-secondary in the loop, right? What are the skills that are in demand? And specifically, they're constantly looking forward. And so for an individual that's going into IUPUI and a four-year degree, they need to know what the skills are going to be in 4 years when they come out, and education needs to be training to that. And so I think that's extremely important. And I think that's how we'll address some of this need of the constant change in industry and with technology and such.
Chelsea.
I think at every end of the spectrum, depending on whether or not we're trying to work with a customer who is, has little to no work history, maybe newly out of high school, maybe newly out of a post-secondary program or post-secondary institution, to, again, somebody who might be long-term unemployed, like we were just talking about with regard to our Employee Up program and serving individuals who may have been in a position for 20, 30, 40 mm-hmm. years. The number one concern that we hear from employers is related to soft skills, again, on every end of the professional and educational spectrum.
We probably ought to define what those soft skills are. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, no. Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, things like, being adaptable and flexible and having conflict resolution skills and understanding how to keep your skills relevant and transferable, and being able to transition from, you know, from job to job or throughout a career path in a particular company. I think that's, you know, again, that's one challenge that we constantly hear from employers, and again, on every in every program that we operate or fund or oversee, that's something that we try to work very hard on with our customers, regardless of what their work history and educational experience may or may not have been, because it's oftentimes the key factor in landing your next position.
What are the biggest challenges or biggest gaps, you know, in terms of the marketplace here in Central Indiana? Chelsea, I'm going to stay with you, but I want to hear Nicole's thoughts as well.
Biggest gaps with regard to skills, you think?
Yeah, well, and also just the area, because we are making a transition to a new kind of jobs marketplace, to a new kind of workforce with new expectations on both sides. To some degree, I guess I'm asking how well we're doing at that, not just with you guys, but in general.
Sure. I mean, I think I'll go back to Nicole's point with regard to, you know, being skills relevant and keeping skills relevant. You know, we're projected to have 51,000 tech-related jobs, new tech-related jobs between now and 2025, which means, you know, even in my own role and responsibilities, I probably will be challenged with you know, upskilling my own technical skills. So across every, you know, every occupation, whether or not it's a tech service, tech product, or even a tech enabled position, those expectations and those skills are just going to continue to increase. And employers are going to continue to look at, you know, the relevancy of those and how often individuals are upskilling on their own. And again, taking that opportunity, maybe between career opportunities, to upskill individually.
Nicole.
I think with regard to gap, as Chelsea mentioned, you know, we did a lot of research on the gap. If there was a skills gap, what did it look like? And, you know, we took some time to look at supply and demand. And basically what we've come to is that by 2025, there's a need for more than 51,000 technically skilled individuals. If we maintain the same pace that we're on currently, we're still going to fall short by just under 25,000 individuals skilled to fill those open positions.
So we're only going at about half the rate.
At about half the rate, correct. And so the need is to really focus in on workforce development and the stakeholders there. How do you bring education? How do you bring employers? How do you bring training providers outside of the post-secondary system? How do you bring workforce development experts? How do you bring economic development? How do you bring community development together to address that need to ensure that in 10 years, we're where we need to be?
Well, and I've seen a lot of research that shows that, you know, there are many economists who are now projecting that there's going to be a worldwide labor shortage by 2030, and that the competition for skilled labor around the globe is going to be almost Darwinian in nature, you know, where you either win or you get killed, pretty much. And I guess I'm saying that as a way of prefacing. We focus an awful lot on the workers and the retraining they need to do and the skills, but that also is going to require a certain change of mindset on the part of employers, it would seem, too, that, you know, in some ways they will be the ones who will have to start bargaining for services and, to some degree, start competing for labor rather than it exclusively being people competing for jobs. Nicole.
No, I think that's absolutely right, and I think we see that right now. You know, we understand that a number of individuals that graduate from, you know, schools here within Indiana, only about 50% of those individuals remain. And then if you look at that data 5 years later, about 50% of those that were here are now gone. And so there's a focus on the competition between employers nationally is huge. They're stealing from each other. And so how do you address that, and specifically within Central Indiana? You know, you address that by making sure that employers do have a piece in this, right? They need to, rather than steal from each other, why don't they need to inform post-secondary education, right, at the skill sets that they individuals need to be coming out with so there are more in the pool to choose from.
How do you, Chelsea and Nicole, both of you, how do you go about, though, counseling not just the people who want work, but at some point, I'm presuming the other part of your pipeline is those folks who are employers, that they might have to change their approaches at times. That, you know, the landscape's changing for them just as much as it is for the worker. Mm-hmm. Chelsea.
Well, I mean, again, I'm going to go back to our long-term unemployed program, for instance, because this is a barrier that we face with employers. So with regard to job seekers who have been unemployed for 27 weeks or longer, there are often biases around, you know, gaps in employment. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it's our responsibility to work with employers to help them understand the relevance that, that these individuals bring as potential candidates for their available positions. And just that, you know, the fact that there might have been a barrier that was, you know, related to, you know, directly related to the individual or just related to circumstances, you know. But you know, that's just one example of those ways that we have to change the thinking and the approach that employers take, you know. Maybe to not utilize traditional screening processes and mechanisms that screen those individuals out, but consider maybe more progressive alternatives that wouldn't, you know, that would allow those individuals to be screened and considered just like anyone else.
Nicole, I'm going to ask a variation of the same question. What is the hardest thing when you're dealing with people who are either unemployed or underemployed? What is the hardest thing to make them understand about changes they have to make? And then I'm going to say on the other end, with employers, since we are living in a change, what's the hardest thing to make them understand?
I think with regard to individuals, the hardest thing to make them understand is that they have to own it, right? They have to own the desire to get the skill sets required to get the job. They have to look in the mirror and realize that they that we can offer them a number of opportunities, but they have to own that and they have to buy into it. So I think that that's one of the hardest pieces to address. I think with regard to employers, and to touch a little bit on what Chelsea said, it's just changing the mindset. I mean, as you talk about the unemployment numbers dwindling, the pool of individuals to choose from that are applying for work now is less. And so they have to be more open. They have to change some of their mindsets related to individuals that may have some type of history, right, and ex-offenders, or individuals coming out of the military and trying to transition into civilian life. Employers will need to understand how that impacts their search.
Chelsea.
I would just add to that, too. I mean, you know, oftentimes potential candidates are turned away from job opportunities because they have no experience. But how do you gain experience if you're never given an opportunity? So again, just challenging employers to support the needs of the workforce while also trying to, you know, to fill positions with qualified workers in order to, you know, meet their own demands.
We are talking about employment and workforce development on No Limits today. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named David has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. David, welcome to the program. David, are you with us? I'm not hearing you. We'll try to get that figured out. Instead, I'm going to take an email from a listener who did not wish to be named. And says, this is a really good discussion, but how do your guests deal with the real issue of age discrimination? Nicole, I'm going to start with you on that one.
Well, I think age discrimination is a very real thing, and that with regard to employee ND, I think it's, you know, it's our job to work with employers to understand, again, the relevance of the working population regardless of age. It's important to understand that you're marketing someone for the skill sets that they have and not the age and how close they may or may not be to retirement. I mean, it's a matter of, can this individual complete the job and do they have the skill sets that are required? And so, you know, for us, when we utilize our business services team to really go out and understand an employer's need and ensure that once we've identified what we feel is an appropriate candidate to help them fill their position, we talk them through some of those components.
Is it difficult? I mean, we're talking about not just economic factors here, but cultural ones too. I mean, our presumptions about age and all of that sort of stuff. How do we break that down? Because there is this idea that, the idea of retirement itself as something that starts at 65. We've done shows on that as well that indicate, you know, retiring at 65 made a lot of sense when life expectancies were maybe in the early 70s. But now, with numbers showing that if you make it to 60, you've got a better than even chance of making it into your late 80s or even into your early 90s, those savings won't necessarily carry you that far, which means we have to think about work a lot differently and careers a lot differently. How do we go about doing that? I'm going to start with Chelsea on that one, but I also want to hear Nicole's thoughts.
I think it's again, our ability to serve the community is very job seeker focused. And so that's where we attempt to put the most energy into addressing this issue. So I would, we really work on helping customers of any age understand what makes them marketable and how to tell that story and how to, how to present themselves regardless of age, but based on ability and skills and interest and interest in longevity in the workforce. That's while we have a very business solutions focused division of our work, we're very job seeker focused, and that's where we start this conversation.
Nicole.
I agree. I would say that most of our influence is just training individuals on how to sell themselves. But additionally, on the flip side, and like I said previously, is just getting an employer to understand just that, right? That the retirement age is no longer 65, that the industry is currently continues to change and will be changing. And that if an individual that's presented has the skill sets that they're requiring, the ability to skill market that individual for us to do it on their behalf or for the job seeker themselves to sell their individual or to sell themselves to that employer is extremely important. And we focus in on that.
I think we've got David back now. So David, welcome to the program.
Yes, good to hear you.
I wanted
to ask your panel. It was even mentioned earlier, the boilerplate complaint from corporations for not hiring is that they can't find skilled associates. But really, how much of this is essentially due to corporations or employers' conscious decision to get rid of their own internal training and development departments in the last 8 years? Isn't this essentially strong-arming government agencies such as your own to subsidize what they used to do themselves?
Good question. Thanks very much for the call, David, and thank you for your persistence in getting back with us. Thanks. Nicole.
I think that with regard to training incumbent workers internally, I mean, I can't speak to corporate decisions to eliminate training mm-hmm. internally. I think that when we talk about the need for ensuring that we are leveraging what's out there, if a corporation understands that they can get a post-secondary institution or they can get another training organization that's delivering the same skill sets that they were delivering internally, it definitely is probably more cost effective for an organization to maybe outsource that and have those individuals trained elsewhere. But I think, with regard to the training and access to training funds that we have available, and the transition from the Workforce Investment Act into the Workforce Innovation and Opportunities Act really allows for us to offset some of the cost of those employers with training their incumbent workers. And so we have the ability to go in with some funding to help upskill those current individuals and then allow them to backfill some of those vacant positions with additional workers.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the challenges regarding employment and workforce development in Central Indiana. My guests are both from Employ Indy. They are Nicole Thompson, who is the president and CEO, and Chelsea Meldrum, who is the Vice President of Development. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can find us on social media. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about employment and workforce development in central Indiana. My guests are Nicole Thompson. She is the president and CEO of Employ Indy, and Chelsea Meldrum, who is vice president of development for Employ Indy. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at wfyi, or you can do what Larry has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Larry, welcome to the program.
John, you know, the last caller touched on it. What these people are is bullies. They go out and bully people. They bully small business. They allow these big corporations to hire people at a subsidized rate, which they say it's a grant, but you know all grant money, that comes from taxes. That's money that we are that's taken from us by force. If we don't give the money, we get our force used on us. So they're taking this money, and they're mitigating the situation here in the state of Indiana where we're not educating our kids in the university level. Or at the grammar school level or at any level, we have a bunch of illiterate Hoosiers around here. That's why they're in place to mitigate with federal dollars because of guest worker programs and other programs, and the programs they're talking about are really irrelevant, and they should be ashamed of themselves to come in there and try to put that out. They need to be at the State House protesting to get back to the common school system, but they are out. They don't have anything to offer. They already said that if they don't have the grant, they're not there. So this is shameless, and it's cruelty that they're working against these people that are sincerely looking for jobs, knowing that they don't have anything to offer but a short-term job for a corporation to come in, employ them for a few months, get an insurance policy on them, and when the program goes out, they drop the employment. So they should be ashamed. The state of Indiana should be ashamed.
Thanks very much for the call. I'm going to give them a chance to respond. Thanks, Larry.
Thank you, Larry, for your comments. I would disagree a little bit. I don't believe we're putting people into subsidized employment with the dollars that Employ Indy is utilizing. We do have the ability to help an employer, if needed, offer some on-the-job training or some incumbent worker training. But what we really focus on with regard to our investment is long-term employment. And so we focus on putting an individual into a training program that is along a career pathway. We also work to place an individual into full-time long-term employment. We really don't work to put anyone into temporary or subsidized employment with the dollars that we're utilizing.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Tamara, and if you'd like to reach out to us via email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Tamara says, when is society going to admit that college doesn't truly develop the workforce and was never intended to do so? When will we admit that college isn't for everyone and trade schools are disappearing because we don't encourage or discuss the importance of high-skilled workers? It starts at the high school level, creating the soft and hard skills that are lacking in today's workforce. It starts with the education system, not the employers, and college isn't the answer to develop the workforce. This is something no one is talking about. I don't understand why we don't reevaluate how we prepare our citizens to be part of the workforce. I'm going to let either one of you have a crack at that one.
I think that that's absolutely right. I think college is a piece of the workforce solution, and I think that Tamara is right when she says college is not for everyone. That's why a number of K-12 programming now is focused on how to prepare individuals at the high school level, once they complete high school, to if they're not ready to go on to post-secondary, if college isn't for them or they have no desire to go into the military, then how do they get employment? The Purdue Polytechnic High School that's looking to open here within Indianapolis is an example of that, and the ability and the desire both of employers and educators to understand that college isn't for everyone. I think that the new Workforce Innovation and Opportunities Act also allows for new innovative and immersive learning types of opportunities where individuals can go out and just get the skill sets they need to fill a position. It does not require necessarily a six-month training program. It doesn't require a four-year degree. It's just a week-long immersive training, and then they can go out and they're marketable.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about employment and workforce development here on No Limits. Leanne, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Yeah, well, I just joined a few minutes ago, and you may have addressed this type of thing already, but about 5 years ago, my husband, who has a PhD in chemistry, was let go of a good position because almost his whole group was outsourced. Mm-hmm. And so since that time, since he's over 50, not ready to retire yet, he has not been able to get an equal job because the comments have been that they haven't said this to him, but he knows people in the area. And so the comments have been that everybody would retire at the same time. Therefore, they can't hire him. They're all the workforce and the jobs where he would be able to find work in Central Indiana are about the same age. So that's a concern of mine. We've been here for the past 20 years, and we've lived in Central Indiana our whole lives. We've been working for about 20 years here in Central Indiana. I'd prefer to stay here, but mm-hmm. we will probably have to move.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
I just wondered if you guys had addressed issues like this in the past, or.
Well, I'm going to toss it to Nicole and Chelsea, but thank you for calling in and thank you for sharing your story. Nicole or Chelsea, either one.
Thank you, Leanne, for calling in. Yes, I think that we have had to address that. You know, at the height of the recession, where there were a number of individuals coming through our doors to seek services, we've served a lot of individuals at the PhD level and really tried to help them understand how potentially the job market has changed and how their skills that they had from a previous employment are now transferable potentially into another industry. And it may not be the exact same job that they had before. But we've worked with individuals to understand how, you know, maybe some additional training, again, some of those immersive trainings and those short-term training programs can really get them the skill sets required to maintain at the level that they once were. So those are some of the things that we've done in the past.
How much of this, though, I mean, you listen to both Leanne and Larry to some degree, and it's clear this is an issue that is fraught with a lot of emotion for a lot of people. And we've had, you know, some epic battles here in the state over the right to work law and all of that, in part because that notion of employment is not just about, you know, going to an office. It's also about where you put your roots down, where you raise your kids, all of the most important life decisions you are going to make. In Leanne's case, sounds like there's a possibility it will mean moving away from the place where they grew up and their homes. How do you help people work through that?
I think Employee Indy alone doesn't have the ability necessarily to help one person work through that. I think it's a combination of the community in general working together to ensure that we understand that these individuals are out there, and we help to ensure that there are opportunities to keep these individuals here in Indiana, and that we work closely. If Employee Indy doesn't have the resources or to serve an individual to help them get to the education attainment that they were at previously, then we understand the need to identify partners who can help us do that. Additionally, I think it's extremely important to be open and honest about the skill sets and the ever-changing environment, right? And the need, again, to look within oneself and understand if, you know, even if someone has several years of education, there is still that continuous need to evaluate, am I still as marketable as I once was? And do I need to just take one extra step that could put me back on that platform?
Gotten a Facebook question from a listener named Gary who says, I am interested in determining what happens with the individuals who wander in exhibiting debilitating cognitive or physical deficits. Nicole or Chelsea, either one of you.
I think that, you know, what we do, we work Employee Up as an example of some of the programs that we do have available, some of the dollars we have, where we can offer additional services. You know, there's tons of research out there that talk about long-term unemployed individuals. They don't have any physical deficits, but they have a lot of emotional issues, right? Because they've been unemployed for so many months or years sometimes. And so just kind of going out and having the opportunity to talk to someone that doesn't have a biased opinion that really can help get them back on track. We have the ability to offer that. We have the ability to extend those services into their family. Their children, their spouses are also often affected by the loss of a job. And so we want to make sure that we are serving the family holistically when it comes to some of those.
How do you work through, though, I'm still thinking about Leanne's sort of question where, you know, you can say, you know, to some degree, there was a kind of social contract until relatively recently that said, okay, if you follow this set of rules, you know, you go on, you do well in school, you do well, you show up, you do your work, you're going to be taken care of. And to some degree, what happened there is it sounds like her husband did all of that, but because of the changing landscape, possibly some changes in tax policies that make it more advantageous to outsource than to keep people on and all of that, their lives have a hole blown in it. There's bound to be some resentment there that becomes one of those kind of emotional issues that you talk about. How do you work through, because that isn't something you want to carry into an interview. On the other hand, having known a few people in that situation, it's something that's never that far below the surface with them. Chelsea.
Well, and I was just going to say that, yes, oftentimes that that rightful anger and resentment and bitterness is the biggest barrier to employment. It's the one thing that frequently gets in the way or most in the way of somebody, again, as Nicole said, taking that time and having that ability to look inward and say, okay, what do I need to do to continue to make myself more marketable? Again, we impose some of those services in some programs that we do offer, but they're only as beneficial as somebody is willing to take advantage of. So while we make them available, we provide direct access and or we make referrals to those services. A lot of times individuals aren't necessarily or not willing to recognize that they have a need for those.
We're talking about employment and workforce development in Central Indiana. Dustin, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
My question has to do with the increasing amount of automation that we're already seeing in the workforce. Elon Musk, for example, has estimated that self-driving cars will be a reality by 2018. I know that my grandparents were both truck drivers, along with an uncle of mine. And this is only one of the spheres of industry that is going to be completely transformed by automation in the future. My question for your panel is, to what degree are you guys prepared to retrain an entire workforce that has its jobs taken away by robots, essentially? I mean, this is a future thing, but it's a future that's rapidly approaching.
Yeah, the future is getting closer and closer every minute.
It is.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Dustin. Nicole.
I think Employee Indy is constantly looking at the future with regard to data, what's in demand, how is the landscape changing. And I think automation is one of those pieces that is definitely playing in. But I think in regard to just to support the conversation around the need for consistent training and the need to really start to head into the technology approach and those technical skills training, there are still going to be people that will need to maintain robots and build them and ensure that the functionality is there and that the codes and things of that nature are current and ever changing. And so it's not what it used to be. The rules of workforce and the landscape has changed. It's changed drastically in the last 20 years. And so, it's extremely important for everybody to understand that the direction that the economy is headed in and how they fit within that and the need to be constantly retrained.
Steve, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi. Thank you very much.
Certainly.
Conversation.
Thanks much.
A little different perspective. I'm a California transplant. I've had 30 years experience in Silicon Valley and technical areas, and I've been living in the northern Indianapolis area for about a year and a half. Just some comments on the side. What I find interesting about this whole thing, and it kind of touches on the question of automation, is the issue of how these corporations and people who help people find jobs are working with people. My experience has been that the job boards, number one, I've pretty much never gotten a response back from a job board. Those things like Indeed. I mean, you can spend a half an hour, depending on who you contact, and find out that they never get back to you. On interviews that I've had 3 or 4 interviews in the Indianapolis area. I find people never get back to you. The recruiters are most notorious in that area. You can spend 12, 15 hours preparing for an interview with a company. You can read their 10 Qs. You can bone up on what they're doing. You can have all the technical skills in the background. But if you're older and if you've been out of the workforce for a little while, take care of your family or take care of somebody who's sick, it's looked upon negatively. I find HR people, especially in this area, incredibly ignorant. They push technology and want technical people, but they don't even understand what the acronyms mean. And they can't see the effect between, people who have various programming skills or, let's say, technology skills. So, I've kind of reached the conclusion in a way, when people ask me what to do, I say, go out and find a profession where you have a license, where you can practice as a sole practitioner, until these corporations catch up with the fact that there's just a whole new wave of people coming out there that are going to be lost. They're not going to be able. They're not perfect widgets that have the 3-letter acronyms that the HR people want. They have little issues with them. They're human beings, and until the corporations recognize that, and HR people are smart enough to see that, and the engineering managers actually understand that, I don't think there's going to be much progress.
Steve, I'm going to jump.
My answer off the air.
Yeah, I'm going to jump in and let Nicole and Chelsea respond to that. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Chelsea, how about if we go with you real quickly?
Sure. I can appreciate Steve's concerns, and it's something we hear from our customers on a daily basis. I think, again, we can't drive home the skills message enough. When those electronic mechanisms are looking through individuals' applications and resumes, leading with your skills first is critically important in getting recognized, number one. And number two, networking, which we haven't talked about, in order to, understand what's available and who might help you in obtaining a position that you're interested in is again critical, because that's how you're going to build in that human element.
And that will have to be the last word in this particular segment of the conversation, but we will continue this conversation because clearly there's great interest in it. I'd like to thank my guests from EmployeeIndy, Nicole Thompson and Chelsea Meldrum. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.